and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We've got a big show ahead of NFL football starting this week. An all-pro Cowboys expecting big things out of Zeke. Le'Veon Bell is still a no-show for the Steelers. But we start this morning the same way we started last year at this time, with the Patriots and their aging quarterback. Last year, Tom Brady was 40, and some wondered what he had left. Well, he won league MVP. This year, at age 41, I'm not sure anyone's doubting him. In an interview with TB12.com, Tom Brady said, "I can see the end line now, but I still feel like I have a lot to play for." CeCe, he's mentioned in the past he wants to play till he's 45. But what are your expectations for Tom Brady this season?
Man, it's very, very difficult for someone like Tom because he changes the narrative as far as what you're going to discuss because he's blown through every stop sign, every signal, everything we have from history that would tell us what an aging quarterback, what an aging superstar, what a guy like him who's accomplished as much as he had this late in his career. What else is he going to accomplish? What is going to drive him on a daily basis? So for me, based on, too, some of the changing things around him with the offensive line, with Edelman being out for 4 games, I believe that allows Tom to put the type of focus that you would need, something outside of yourself, extenuating circumstances. He's worried about that left tackle. He's worried about his blind side. He's worried about these different wide receivers. He's mentioned that, the lack of chemistry that he has with him. So in doing that, I expect him to be focused. If everything was really, really going smooth, based on how much he's accomplished, it's humanly almost impossible to keep resetting your goals the way Tom has. But you can believe, look at the last 2 Super Bowls, how they've gone. Tom's played amazing. One of them, a tremendous comeback, the greatest comeback we've ever seen in Super Bowl history, gets Tom Brady the title as the GOAT in his 5th Super Bowl. Comes back next year with nothing to prove. They go to the Super Bowl after a great season, get upset by the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think the motivation, the extenuating things he has with this team, the lack of guys that he's played with on the outside and continuity, and man, I just lost the last game that I played in, and I played spectacular. I believe that he is motivated. So my expectations would have to be exactly like they were last season. I expect him to throw for 4,200 yards. I expect him to throw over 30 touchdowns. I don't expect him to throw a whole bunch of interceptions. And I expect the Patriots to win 12 games and be in the AFC Championship.
Tom Brady is, while I believe he's the greatest quarterback ever, so in some ways he would be easy to evaluate, for me and the way my analytical approach and the way I'm very reliant on precedent and history, he's become almost impossible to evaluate. Because we talk about sports unicorns, he's a historical unicorn across all sports. A guy who 3 years ago had the resume of the greatest quarterback ever, and since then has put together the greatest 3 years of his career. So think about that. Like, if he retired after the Seattle Super Bowl, he's the GOAT. He's got 4 rings. He's got a couple MVPs. He's got all these records. He has nothing but playoff appearances and divisional championships. And yet since then, he's just built on that. Look at what the last 3 years are compared to the 3 years prior. He's better across the board. His quarterback rating the last 3 years, if that was a career, all-time NFL best. Touchdown interception ratio, if that was a career, all-time NFL best. That's his age 38, 39, and 40 season. So what do I expect for his age 41 season? For Tom Brady to keep making all the doubters look like fools. That is assuming he's healthy, which he has been throughout his career, and that is assuming that he does not lose what you're talking about, which is the ability to continue to self-motivate, the ability to continue to convince himself they don't believe in me, or I'm not as good, or I was the 199th pick for a reason. And in that regard, maybe the way the Super Bowl ended actually works in his favor this year, that Tom Brady says, listen, I'm a guy that's been to 8 of these things. My last memory in the Super Bowl is going to be a strip sack. going to be the team losing because of a mistake I made? Hell no, it's not. Like, so maybe that's the newest motivating factor. But I'm out of the Tom Brady doubting business because I tried to use all history and precedent last year to show why he wasn't going to be what he was, and he won the league MVP.
So we go full circle then. We come back around and say, well, what does he have left to prove? You know, to either to himself or to his family or to NFL history or to fans. You have to look at this guy and how he does self-motivate, which, by the way, is not easy to do when you've accomplished as much as you have, and say, well, what else does this guy have to prove?
Well, sometimes that's why team sports is so great. It can be agonizing because you're dependent on so many people. There's so many variables that come into play to determining who's going to be a champion. But looking across and looking at your peers, and for guys that aren't Tom Brady, you know, like Marcus Cannon, one of his offensive linemen, like he's got accountability to that guy. Gronk, how long is he going to play? They've played, they've had a lot of fun together, but how long is he going to play? So he's got accountability to Gronk. That head coach, if he's out there, if Bill Belichick is coaching you, Tom Brady knows, I got to be accountable to that guy, what he wants me to do. So a lot of times, all you need to do is get to the building, and once you see your teammates in the organization, you can find the motivation. It's for that guy. It's for that guy. It's for that guy. It's for that guy, so that they can continue to win. And they also have some guys on the Patriots team that have not won. So Tom trying to get those guys their first ring, it becomes very, very important in the locker room.
And that is the biggest X factor and the biggest question of the Patriots season, because there's not a whole bunch of suspense, not when they play in that division and not when we have grown to expect Brady to be at his best in the biggest spots. We know they're going to be in the playoffs. We know they're almost assuredly going to be a top two seed. At least they have been every year this decade. So what are we really talking about with the Patriots until January? The biggest X factor is those guys that C is saying Brady has to be accountable to them. Are they going to be able to keep up their end of the bargain, particularly early in the year? When you lost your left tackle in free agency, you lost your draft pick to injury in the preseason, when you are thin at the position that protects Tom Brady, and the first game you have Houston, and the second game you have Jacksonville. Are those guys going to be able to make sure that Tom Brady can play a full 16 games and not deal with something that is an underrated factor every year in the NFL, and we don't do a good enough job talking about it, which is a player who gets dinged early, who doesn't miss games, but is never right. We saw Cam deal with this a couple years ago. We saw Russell Wilson deal with this two years
Andrew
ago,
Luck
I believe.
Played throughout the season.
Andrew Luck, a guy, if he doesn't miss games, we think, okay, he must be fine, mm-hmm. but he's never actually fully healthy. And I would argue that if you could pick any two teams in the AFC, the Pats would rather play the Steelers early than the Houston front and the Jacksonville front.
Yeah, of course.
While they're figuring out their offensive line. Like, so that is the X factor, is we've showed the highlights of last year against Houston, of Jadeveon Clowney coming off and crushing Brady a few times. Like, that is the question, because even though he's blowing through all these stop signs, the human body has, even Brady's, and as pliable as it is, yeah. has a limit. And those two teams early against that offensive line, that's the one concern I would have for New England.
I know you have been really concerned with this offensive line in New England for a while now, but are you also to the point where you're worried about Tom Brady's safety and durability making it through 16 games?
No, they get rid of the football. Their system allows him to be able to get rid of the football very, very quickly. They throw to their running backs, throw to their tight ends. They don't hold the ball a long time. So it's a matter of not how many times you can sack Tom Brady, how many times can you put a hit on Tom Brady. So, no, they have their best offensive line coach in the NFL. So worried would be not. We're looking for things that would lead the, or not have the Patriots make it to the Super Bowl. So when you talk about things, that's what it's not. I'm worried about it. Yeah. When I look at their football team, I look at strengths and I look at weaknesses. What are the pluses? What are the minuses? There's no way you look at that offensive line and think, you know something, this is going to be the strength of that team. That would, now at the end of the season, they might be. But it's not going to be starting week number
one. If we flip to the last page of the book and we see, wait, the Patriots didn't make the AFC Championship game. What happened in the intervening 200 pages? It would be something like the offensive line never got right. The weapons weren't good enough. Brady got dinged early.
They didn't repair that defense.
Right. They had to go to Brian Hoyer. Like, or the defense, which is, we don't, again, just like with the Cowboys, we don't talk enough about the defense possibly being good. With the Patriots, I don't know if we talk about enough of the defense, how much issues it had last year, that they didn't fix it.
All right, we'll leave it there. Talk more about that. Coming up, though, is Zeke about to take his game to a whole new level, if it's even possible? One of his teammates sure thinks so. That's next. This is First Things First.
Fox Sports Golf host Shane Bacon here, and with summer winding down, I wanted to tell all First Things First listeners about an exclusive offer from TeeOff.com. Instead of sitting around reading about all the expert opinions of the Hans redesign of TPC Boston, get out and play a round or two at Pine Hills Golf Club in Plymouth, Mass., a 36-hole facility containing two, yes, two, championship-style golf courses designed by Jack Nicklaus and Reese Jones. Or you can tee it up at one of the thousands of great golf courses across the country on TeeOff.com by PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour. And you can do so without booking fees. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener to my podcast, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with the single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. And hey, if you're a golf fan, come on over and give my podcast a listen, The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. We try to make golf not so, you know, golfy. That's the goal, right? The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, it's golf but without all the rules. Okay, back to First Things First.
The face of the Dallas Cowboys this season, Ezekiel Elliott. Cowboys all-everything weapon looking to have a dominant year after missing six games last season due to suspension. He thinks he can. Fans think he can. And his teammates think he can. All-pro guard Zach Martin told the media yesterday he's excited to see what Zeke can do.
Just the way he's running, the way he's approaching every day, it's just something feels different. And, you know, I think he's ready for a big year.
I noticed it too. Can you put your finger on it though?
No, I don't. I just think, you know, he's always been a hard worker, but it's just something different about this year. He's coming each day, running hard. Although he hasn't played in the preseason, I don't think there's any question that he's ready for this week.
All right, Nick, when you look at the way these two teams match up, the Panthers and the Cowboys, is Zeke going to be the difference maker? Is he going to be the key for the Cowboys' success?
Not in this game. This is, to me, this is not a Zeke game. I look at the strengths of both teams. I look at the weaknesses of both teams. And the Panthers were, by any metric, one of the best run defenses in football last year. Their biggest strength on their team is their defensive line, followed by their linebacking core. And you could maybe flip those two.
Yes.
If you want to say their biggest strength is Keekly. They're not going to have Thomas Davis this week because he's suspended. But
yes.
That
still
front seven, absolutely. That front seven is where they are at their best. Their secondary, not so much. And they got rid of one of their corners this offseason, a young guy they ended up trading him away. He actually then got suspended and cut, or got arrested and cut by Philadelphia, who had traded for him. Like, you can beat the Panthers through the air. Very difficult to beat them on the ground. Conversely, where else I would say is the place to beat the Panthers? Their offensive line getting after their quarterback and getting after Cam Newton. So if you're asking me, the key, this is a key for DeMarcus Lawrence, that Cowboys improve front seven to get after Cam. But the biggest key is, this is going to be, okay, Dak, we gave you all these great weapons. Really no great weapons at all.
Did we?
And let's see what you can do, because if there's going to be a game all year long that Zeke is not equipped for high-level success, it would be a game that we know Travis Frederick's out, that Zach Martin is still, he's going to play, but he's coming off that injury, and you are playing arguably a top four front seven in the entire NFL. So I don't think Zeke's the key. I think the aerial attack, which could be the Cowboys' weakness this year, is the key.
One thing, too, to watch early in the season, the first four games of the season, watch defenses. Defenses will be ahead of the offenses. And the reason why, it's easier to practice defense. It's easier to put in the defensive assignments. It's a lot harder to go full go. The lack of two-a-day practices and padded practices, they have the offense behind the defenses. happens in the NFL, especially since they changed the last collective bargaining agreement. So when you get ready to watch the first few weeks of the NFL season, don't expect teams to be prolific throwing the ball, running the ball, because it takes some time, not unless you're going against a bad defense. But what you can typically see in a game like this, especially with Dallas, with their offensive line and running back, Carolina is going to take them out of their running game. To me, this is the game Allen Hurns was brought to Dallas for. He hadn't had a big game in a couple years. Dallas is trusting that he is the big play guy, because if we had thought that he was going to be healthy and be a dependable 1,000-yard receiver, wouldn't that have changed our conversations this offseason?
Of course.
Man, their wide receiving core. Man, they're not good enough. Can they make another plays? And just a little side appetizer, Cole Beasley. Can he convert those third downs to be able to keep that offense on the field? Because I believe in the second half of the game, if they're able to do that, then that's when you get Zeke trying to dominate and take over the game. Not in the first quarter, not in the second quarter. Allen Hurns, I'm going to put the pressure on him to get it started, because he has better matchups than they have in the interior seven.
I know this weekend might be an outlier game because this is not where Zeke could be successful, but they were so good last year running the game. Zach Martin went on to say, last year we didn't necessarily play up to our standards. We didn't run the ball effectively as we needed to. How much better could this running game be with him? I know he missed six games, but how much better besides him being there could they get?
Listen, Zeke through last year led the NFL in yards per game rushing. So not total rushing, but yards per game, led the NFL. His rookie year, led the NFL. In NFL history, here's the full list of guys who through 2 years have averaged more yards per game. Eric Dickerson and Clinton Portis. And people forget how great Portis was early. Good enough that he was traded straight up for Champ Bailey early in his career. Zeke is going to be, over the course of a season, a 1,400-plus yard running back. Like,
yes.
As long as he's this version of himself,
and
that's
before
who
we
he'll
got
be.
The medical news, Nick, you thought it was going to be a split. You thought exactly what they were saying without the offensive line, any question marks, that it could be
a 2,000-yard season. Before I found out they didn't have their center, I thought the path to victory for the Cowboys was not 100-yard games from Zeke Elliott, but 125 to 140-yard games for Zeke Elliott, which puts you on that 2,000-yard pace. But even with their center, I would have said, this is, if you get 1,600 yards in a season, that doesn't mean you got 100 yards in every game. You're going to have a 70-yard game buttressed by 130 or 140-yard game. This would have been one of the games I said, this is a 70-yard game for Zeke. Like, this is just such a difficult team to run on. We talk about Cam's inconsistencies. The one thing that's been consistent about the Panthers over the, basically since Ron Rivera's been there, you can't run on this team.
No.
Not effectively, not consistently. Cam can give some games away, and you've been able to throw on them. They've been looking for corners and secondary help for really the last, since Rivera's been there as well. But you, and certainly since Josh Norman left, you can't run on this team. So this is where it's, you mentioned Allen Hurns, the tight end who Jeff Swaim and company, and Dak. Like, okay, like let's see what they can do, because this is actually a game that is set up for them.
All right, let's take a little turn now. Time now for this guy's fantasy update, sponsored by DraftKings.
Don't mind if I do.
Nick, you're picking week one running backs today. Give us one stud and then one value pick.
Well, from that segment, you know I'm not picking Zeke, not against this defense.
Right.
The most expensive running back's Le'Veon Bell. We don't even know what his carries are going to be. So the stud, I'm going with David Johnson. Fresh off the injury.
Okay.
Now, it was a wrist injury, suffered early, so you don't expect him to have any ill effects from it. It's going up against a Washington defense that I do think you can make some work on. 8,800 DraftKings dollars. It's a very expensive player, but with Sam Bradford at quarterback, I expect a lot of dump-offs to David Johnson, a lot of pass catches, a lot of carries as well. I like David Johnson as the stud.
David Johnson should be the guy back in the conversation. Top four running backs, all purpose. Him, Todd Gurley, Zeke, and L. Bell.
And then if we're going to go with a value pick, this one's a little in the weeds, but I love the defensive matchup, and I like how I think he's going to be used, trying to get Marcus Mariota back on track as a receiver out of the backfield. How about Deion Lewis and the Tennessee Titans? Only $4,900. Miami is dreadful this year on both sides of the ball. I would imagine they would be. It's week zero, but I think they're going to be dreadful on both sides of the ball. I like Deion Lewis, maybe 6 to 8 catches, another dozen carries. They spent a lot of money on him this offseason. $4,900 for Deion Lewis.
Probably one of the better Thunder and Lightning lightning combinations in the backfield. You got Henry banging it there for the Titans. Vrabel in his first game as a head coach. They're going to get the football to Deion.
On Thursday night, football will make its long-anticipated return to living rooms across America. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. For the season opener, DraftKings is hosting a fantasy football contest that's $10 to enter and has a $1 million top prize. But for a limited time only, if you sign up with code FIRST today, DraftKings will give you a free entry with your first deposit. Single game showdown, the newest way to play. All you have to do is draft six players from Thursday's game, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Put your football knowledge to work, and you could win $1 million while watching the season opener. The top prize is $1 million, but you don't have to come in first to be a winner. There are $2.5 million in total prizes, which means thousands of winners. So download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use promo code FIRST to sign up and make your first deposit. When you do, DraftKings will give you a free shot at $1 million this Thursday. That's code FIRST, F-I-R-S-T, at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Big Saturday in college football. It all kicks off with Western Michigan facing off with number 21 Michigan at 11:30 Eastern on FS1. And over on the Big Ten Network, Rutgers battles number 4, the Ohio State.
Two best programs in the Big Ten, both on FS1 Big Ten Network. I'll officially be worried about Michigan C if they lose to Western Michigan, okay?
Yeah. Time for stories to start your morning.
Stop talking about Michigan.
Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil.
Sorry, Jeff.
Alabama off to a good start after their win over Louisville. Tua Tagovailoa, who's been named the starter, is now the favorite to win the Heisman. See, what do you think? You think that's on the table for Tua?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
I mean, he is the type of quarterback they've never had at Alabama. Well, with Nick Saban. They haven't had one like that since Namath or Stabler. Like, that's how long it's been since they've had a great. Now, he is a dual threat, but he's a pocket passer who's a very good athlete. Man, I've been knowing about this kid because I got friends who coached him up in college at a few camps, and everything they say about the kid is true. Great on and off the field, also a great leader.
And you saw in week one why it's no real decision between he and Jalen, and that's not an indictment on Jalen. And we've seen quarterbacks that were far inferior passers win the Heisman when their team is great, when they have this dominant team that we think Alabama might. So, yeah, the odds makers got this right. He and Dwayne Haskins should be on that list. There's a lot of other guys. It's week one, but he certainly should be at the top of it.
All right, to the NFL now. Andrew Luck will take the field on Sunday for the first time since the 2016 season. Luck admitted he was scared to his core that he'd never play football again. Perfectly understandable given what he went through. Nick, what are you looking for from Luck?
16 healthy games and to be a top third of the NFL quarterback. So this is a top 10 quarterback. I don't think that's I want to be fair to Andrew Luck, and I don't want to say he's got to instantly be who he was in 2014 with the 40 touchdowns and one of the five best quarterbacks in football. I don't think that's reasonable after a year off football and really a couple years since he's been healthy, but full 16 games and yeah, top 10 quarterback.
Jenna, you have seen these injuries, one being Tiger Woods. We saw how it changed his perspective, how he's given us insight. Andrew Luck, no player in the pros has given us, NFL, has given us more insight than Andrew Luck. So pulling for him, he is a top 10 quarterback. I believe we're going to see that. He is the ultimate force multiplier. I think we're going to see great things out of Indianapolis, but we got to see him healthy at the end of the season.
It'll be fun to watch. Matt Ryan and the Falcons will take on the defending Super Bowl champion Eagles tomorrow night. When asked about Atlanta's prospects, Ryan said, "I feel we have a good, talented team." Just putting it all out there, Matty. Nick, what are your expectations for the Falcons this season?
Oh, that they go back to the playoffs once again. That they are a team that we discuss as a potential Super Bowl representative out of the brutal NFC, and that they are right there in the toughest division in football, the NFC South. Like, it would not shock me at all if the Falcons have the best record in the NFL this year. I'm not predicting it, but they have that level of talent. And if they can clean up that red zone play calling, they will get back to being maybe the most prolific offense in the league.
Good point, too, Nick. Sarkisian, his second year as the offensive coordinator, he's trying to get Julio and Jones more involved in the red zone. As you see all the top receivers, Julio Jones doesn't have the overall touchdown productivity as this team. Last year also, Nick, because your analytics, you put in for bad bounces. That's what you do for Michigan.
Yes.
No team had more bad bounces a good team than Atlanta did last year. So I expect them double-digit wins at the minimum there in ATL.
See, talking about fumble luck. I like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like
my analytics guy. That's what he gave me. He taught me that.
I like
it. Oh, luck spurred again.
See?
Shout out to
who's
Duke.
Getting smarter now?
And finally, Aaron Donald has reported to training camp after signing a monster new contract. This is the Rams get ready for their Monday night game against the Raiders. He said, I'd be lying if the new contract didn't bring new pressure. Chris, how much pressure is on Donald and the Rams this season?
Oh, no, it's real. No, it's real. You get that money. There's different expectations. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I remember, you know, growing up in a small town that I grew up in, that there's a corner store, and everyone hangs out there. The basketball court's close by, the park and everything. When I go in there as a youth, you know, I come out, you know, people on the corner say, hey, man, you got some spare change. Yeah, yeah. So I go away to college, go to Ohio State, come back to visit. The guys come out, they see me coming out, and they're like, hey, man, you got a couple bucks. Yeah, yeah. Man, I went to the NFL. I came back from Philadelphia, first visit, dude, like, oh, see, man, you got a 20 spot. Yeah. Things change when people know you got money. But he's a great kid. He has great work ethic. We saw last year, MVP season, after holding out, which is very, very rare. We talk about L. Bell, him struggling the first month, not Aaron Donald. He is a hard worker. And what I tell you, money, it just magnifies what you already are. And I think we're just going to see a better Aaron Donald. Why? They got better pass coverage. They got Ndamukong Suh right next to him. And also, last year, they had the highest scoring. So everything is set up for us to see the best Aaron Donald. I believe he will respond to that pressure, and that pressure is real. It's on Aaron Rodgers. It's on Kirk Cousins. It's on everyone. Odell Beckham, all these guys that have gotten new contracts. But the best players, they respond to being paid the best.
There are certain instances where guys get paid off what they can be, not what they have been. Sammy Watkins is an example of that.
Yes.
He got a contract because, man, we saw in year two what he was developing into. We know what his profile was coming out of Clemson. I think you said the most refined freshman receiver you'd
ever
seen.
From high school to college football, yes.
So, but for Sammy Watkins to live up to that contract, he's got to be way better than what he's been over the last couple years. The other guys who got paid this offseason, most notably Gurley, Donald, Mack, Beckham, all they have to do on the field is be who they've been.
Be you.
Be who you were last year, or in Beckham's case, your last healthy year, and we will be getting our money's worth. So I'm not worried about the pressure on Donald. The pressure on the Rams is real, though. The honeymoon can end quickly for a new coach, for a young quarterback, and when you have the type of offseason they had, and when you go against some conventional NFL wisdom as far as not just paying your running back early, not just paying a defensive player $22 million a year, but we don't care what the locker room chemistry is.
Those hired guns.
And Marcus Cooper, or Marcus Peters, and Ndamukong Suh. Bring them all in here, and when the clock is ticking on that Jared Goff rookie contract, oh, the pressure's on them for real now. We'll talk about the pressure on Pittsburgh, get it done. No. This is a team that if they are not 11-12 wins and at the very least in the second weekend of the NFL playoffs, we're going to look at this and say this was a disappointing season and an enormous missed opportunity. So team-wise, enormous pressure on the
Los Angeles Rams. A lot of faith in Wade Phillips, like you do, to be able to handle the personalities. But I think Sean McVay is the new version of Mike Martz in the NFL. I believe he's going to be here to stay. I believe his offense and what he's doing as a team. I think when Mike Martz, when he changed the paradigm as far as coaches and how they did things with the greatest show on turf, Sean McVay, I believe that's what we'll talk to him in the class of someone like Mike Martz.
And if all of this, what they've done in the offseason, comes together, Sean McVay comes out looking real good heading into the next couple.
Absolutely.
All right, let's talk about the Vikings. They came within a game of the Super Bowl last season with Case Keenum at the helm. The team felt they could do better than that. So they went out and they got Kirk Cousins, paid him a lot of money, and thus, as we just discussed with Aaron Donald, they expect a lot of success. But Cousins told the NFL Network, "We haven't won a game yet here with me as the quarterback, so there's still a lot to prove. And believe me, there's plenty of people out there that are doubting that I was worth it, and there's probably a lot more people who believe that it wasn't worth it to bring me here than people who are excited about it and believe that I'll deliver." All right, CeCe, you said a lot there. What will you be looking for from Cousins against the 49ers in his Vikings debut?
Well, the first thing Kurt's got to realize, and I know that the people in Minnesota have conveyed this to him, man, this is a great team around you. They got great units. The only unit they don't have that's a superior unit is their offensive line. And is their offensive line good enough? So he knows, now I haven't won a game, but these guys have won a bunch of games. And they have a tremendous home field advantage playing there. So I believe that the organization has told Kurt that Kurt knows, I don't have to throw for 400 yards. Now, there are going to be some games we need him to drop back and throw the ball 40 times. But that's not the case in Minnesota the way it was in Washington. So him understanding his role and what he needs to do, that defense can win you a lot of games. Their special teams are rock solid. They can win you a lot of games. So just don't crash the car. Realize in certain situations, I'm going to need to be a top-flight quarterback, which he's more than capable of doing. But utilize the whole roster. The same way Philadelphia won the Super Bowl last year. That's the way the Vikings, if they can stick to a plan like that, depending upon the depth of that roster, that's the recipe for success for the Minnesota Vikings. It is not, oh, let's depend on the quarterback. Let's drop him back behind the weakest unit that we have in that offensive line. No, I don't believe that Zim is going to do that to Kirk Cousins.
And that is a luxury not only has Kirk Cousins never had, but he's literally had less than any quarterback in league history. And what do I mean? My friends at Football Outsiders showed me this. I couldn't believe it. NFL history. So Kirk Cousins played 22 games where he's had a passer rating under 85. And under 85 is not great, but it doesn't mean it's a terrible game. He's 1-21 in those games. 1-21 when he doesn't play really well. That's the worst record in those parameters in the history of football. So what was the path to victory in Washington? The first step was Kirk's got to be really good, and then we'll see if we can win. If he's not really good, we lose. That's how it worked in Washington. That will not be the case in Minnesota, but that almost adds to the pressure on him. He already has. I know everybody's under pressure week one. Kirk Cousins under a special type of pressure. First fully guaranteed contract in NFL history. Setting records that were probably, salary-wise, based more on where he was as far as free agency rather than where he is in the quarterback hierarchy. Taking over a 13-3 team that was in the NFC Championship game that the whole league knows exactly what Chris said to be true. You've got a great pair of wide receivers. You've got an excellent running back coming back from injury. You've got a potential Pro Bowl tight end. You've got all pro guys at D-line, at linebacker, and in the secondary. Right. If this team's not good, who are we going to blame? Even if it should be the offensive line, it won't be. We're going to blame number 8. We're going to blame Kirk Cousins. He comes into this year with that type of pressure, unlike anybody else in the league.
You heard from his quote there that he said there are fans, there are Vikings fans who still don't know or want to see me live up to this contract. Mm-hmm. Tell me how Kirk Cousins makes this team better than Case Keenum did, what he's going to do, how different this team is going to look when he took that team to 13-3.
Well, they didn't have a whole playbook with Case. And it's also the coaches, you can't just allow Case to go into a game and do whatever Case wants to do because Case will throw the game away. He'll trick the game off. All right, because he makes a bunch of mistakes. He will throw the ball up for grabs. So that's not the game plan. When you have a veteran leader who has proven that over a long period of time, he can stand in there against the blitz, that it, regardless of what they give him from a front standpoint, he can get the offense in the right place. So he's got more control of the offense and also the volume of the offense. The book they were reading with Case was that thick. With Cousins there, they can go to this. Their audible system is so much better that this offense is ready to take that next step. And if they're able to keep Dalvin Cook healthy, I mean, this is going to be exciting to see. They're going to be a team that plays on a short field. They got a great defense. Their defense dominates. So if they can create turnovers, which their defense didn't do last year, this is going to be a special season for the Minnesota Vikings. And I think that Kurt realizes that.
And so it's a great point you make about the defense not creating turnovers. They were 23rd in the league in forced turnovers. and in every other defensive category, they're first or second. First in points, first in yards, second in points per drive, yards per play, rush defense, second in pass defense. Like, so you are walking into, we talked a ton about Jacksonville, and rightfully so, but Minnesota was eye level with Jacksonville last year as far as best defense in the league. And I agree with you on Case's history as far as he will throw the ball away, but he didn't last year. And that is the.
And a lot of that was because design.
Exactly right. But so the point that I'm making is because the design's going to be different, they are going to allow Kirk Cousins more freedom. You would expect more. They're not going to, wouldn't imagine, be third best in the NFL and not turning the ball over like they were last year. They should have more turnovers this year, but you make up for that by having much more dynamic deep plays, much more dynamic offense, and a harder offense to scheme for. And that offense is going to be harder to scheme for even if they brought back Case, just by having Dalvin Cook come back. We saw early in the year how special of a player he could have been his rookie season before it was cut short.
But we just can't get consumed with Kirk Cousins and him getting the money, because Daniel Hunter, Laval Joseph, Sheldon Richardson, Emerson Griffin, Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, oh my God, Trey Waynes, Harrison Smith,
Xavier Rhodes.
Man, they got a bunch of first-rounders, and they got a bunch of Pro Bowl players on that team. This is a defensive-dominated team. Kirk Cousins, it's a luxury to be able to have a quarterback with a defense like that.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, have the Steelers already found their replacement for Le'Veon Bell? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, Super Bowl champ Chris Canty joins the conversation.
Hey, man.
What up, brother?
What's up, Chris? A lot of energy coming in today.
A lot of energy. It's early in the morning. Yeah. You got to be one of those people that brings energy to it.
And awesome. That's a dope piece right there.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I was going to say that.
Thank you for
that,
Nick.
It's a very dope piece.
I appreciate you.
It's so much
less cool. See, Jenna, Nick said something, and we were going to transition, and you just...
I said exactly what Nick said.
Before the audience thinks we're doping.
Let's get it. There are a list of things. Here, okay, Canty, here we go. Here are a list of things we know, right? It's Wednesday. The Steelers are a football team. They play the Browns on Sunday. And Le'Veon Bell is still not there. Here's a list of things we don't know, whether or when Bell will show up. And now, according to reports, even if Bell shows up, the Steelers might start James Conner against Cleveland. Canty, how much different would the Steelers' offense be with Conner instead of L. Bell week one?
It's a completely different offense. And when you look at game planning for the Pittsburgh Steelers, if you're a defensive coordinator or a defensive player, you recognize that you have to stop number 26, but it's not just in the run game, it's in the passing game. Everybody knows that Le'Veon Bell has great vision. He's got that stop and start. He's a patient runner, quickness and athleticism to get to and through the hole. But when you start talking about matching up against the Pittsburgh Steelers offense with Bell in the backfield, his ability to be able to detach and split out and run routes like a wide receiver puts defenses in a bind. What I mean by that is, if you try to match up with the Pittsburgh Steelers offense and base personnel, then they're going to split Le'Veon Bell out and match him up against a linebacker. If you try to play nickel, what they're going to do is run the football. So Le'Veon Bell is that piece for the Pittsburgh Steelers offense that makes sure that the defense can never be right, no matter what the defensive coordinator calls.
And go ahead, Z.
And let's not get criminal with this, because I see this in sports so often. And every time we have a great player and he's not going to be there, we're going to go to the backup.
Next man up.
Oh, man, this guy, this guy is special. But the guy he's replacing, he was special. Now, how do we lose all the specialness now that James Conner's coming in? Like, let's not forget that. I hate when people do that. The reason why people are stars, they're stars for a reason. You brought out a point that we can just try to hammer home. If I'm in man-to-man, and they have L. Bell in, and they detach L. Bell and move him from tailback, I formation traditionally, and move him outside. If I'm in man-to-man, defensively, I have to check out of that because I don't like that matchup. So immediately, I check into zone. So James Conner, if he checks out, if he's in the I formation traditionally and he moves outside the cavity, I don't have to check none because I ain't afraid of him. He doesn't have an extensive routes from the route tree from a running back. L. Bell is the only running back of the top five running backs that we have, him and Shady McCoy, that if you move them outside, their route running ability is special. Not Todd Gurley, not Ezekiel Elliott, David Johnson a little bit, but not on the level of those players.
And so, Alvin Kamara is not the runner those other guys are. He's great as far as the pass catching, but
I'm talking about top five. Dual threat. Yep. Alvin Kamara's not part of that conversation. Yep. He needs to grow up. He's just a small little puppy right now. He's not full grown. Right. One day he might be that. But L. Bell's a special player. Connors does not provide that threat to the defense, and or he does not have the respect around the league that L. Bell is going to have instantly. Even if they're not going to throw him the ball, there's a respect level if you move him out there, Chris.
And listen, I'm not going to bang on James Conner. He's in his just his second year. He's an amazing story. He's a guy who was third year at Pitt, not only tore his knee, but also got diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma and came back, draft pick. But his next NFL catch will be his first NFL catch. So you've got one guy who's arguably the best pass-catching running back we've seen since, what, Marshall Faulk? Like, in that kind of ilk. And another guy who's never caught a pass in the NFL, who has one rush in his career longer than 12 yards, whose biggest game of his career is 4 for 26. Like, let's all – I understand Big Ben already anointed him. He put the on his forehead. You are Le'Veon Bell's long-term replacement. Maybe, but he must have been miraculous this preseason for them to know that, because he doesn't
He was very good in the preseason.
Absolutely. But
he's very good in the preseason.
But he doesn't yet have the regular season resume for us to have any idea about it. If Alvin Kamara is a pup, this guy's not born yet. And so, of course, their offense is drastically different. And that's where it's nice to have Antonio Brown and Juju and the James Washington, who looks like another wide receiver they found outside of the first round. Like, I'm not saying Pittsburgh would be screwed, but they are drastically different football team.
Why is L. Bell holding out this long at this point? He's eventually going to play. We all assume that. He's eventually going to play for the Steelers. We assume that. So wouldn't he want to just get in at this point? Doesn't it seem like he's going to come in, eventually sign the tag, and play exactly what happened last year? Wouldn't he want to get in and dive into the book and dive into the plays and be that starter and be able to not have the first three games like he did last year?
Well, I don't know what he's thinking, but the holdout is actually 24 hours. Last year, he came in on Labor Day on that Monday. So the holdout for me, it's not this whole offseason. It's based on the amount of time that he came in last year to the time he's there now. So it's not like it's been some big holdout for me.
Yep.
I believe that he's more equipped to be successful this season. I just know if I would have held out, came in the first week of the season, he won't admit that there's certain things he wish he would have changed in his resume, because you don't know. Now you do know. So I think he's more equipped for a good season than he was last year, because the known of, now I know what an NFL season is like after missing training camp, Chris.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate to his mindset. And, CC, I would agree with you. If you're not in training camp, it's going to be hard for you to be in football shape. So there are some things that you could expect Le'Veon Bell to struggle with early on in the season. Now, is he more prepared for it this year as opposed to last year? Absolutely, because he's done it before. But I think the issue around Le'Veon Bell and him letting this linger even into the week, now that we're starting the game plan, Wednesday is the big game plan day for NFL teams typically, I think it's an issue of the Pittsburgh Steelers' long-term plan for Le'Veon Bell and him recognizing that they want to go year to year as opposed to give him the financial security because of the position that he plays. And Le'Veon Bell, he wants to be paid for being more than a running back. And I think the Pittsburgh Steelers recognize, because of the number of touches and the production that he's had in his first few seasons in the league, that at some point he is going to back, he's going to decline, and he's not going to be that top-end producer. So I think that's the hesitancy from the Steelers to pay him, but that's also why Le'Veon Bell doesn't want to report.
He averages more touches per game than any player in the history of football. So they use him a lot when he's available. And listen, you bring up this point a lot, and it can't be disregarded. He's been suspended twice. He did that to himself. It's one of the reasons, in addition to position, that the Steelers are hesitant to pay him. But why is L. Bell doing this? I mean, because he's sticking it to him. Like, and you can say it's immature, I just mean in general.
Yeah.
Someone can say it's immature. Everyone's got to be pulling the same direction. He feels like, my employer doesn't value me. My employer has not done right by me. And so last year, I waited till Monday. This year, I might wait till Wednesday or Thursday. Like,
my question is, does that hurt him? Does that hurt him? So, I'm going to show them. I'm going to wait longer into the week. But doesn't that eventually hurt him and not as much the team?
Well, last year, his least productive month was September. Saying he learned from that and will be better positioned than he was last year. But he's not going to be as well positioned as if he'd had a full offseason. Mm-hmm. Assuming he got through the full offseason with no injury. What he has guaranteed himself is what happened to, who's the player? Jerick McKinnon. The last day of practice before the regular season practice opens up, final play of the practice, blows out his knee, his year's over. He knows he's going to come into the season healthy, and he's not in the business of doing the Steelers favors right now.
Yeah, I don't think that, listen, we don't know how he's thinking, all right? If it was me, I would be there. Because preparation for that first week, like, I would be there. I would be there. I would have been there on Monday. I would have showed up on the same day. Or if there was something that I was having a problem with, and this is the issue that I have, and it's just a slight one, I would have communicated with them. Mm. All right? Because I know I'm going to sign the tender at some point. It's not like they disrespect. I'm getting $14 million now. Holler at your boy. No, it ain't. It's not like he's being disrespected. All right, he's being paid the NFL minimum. So I just don't like the lack of communication. Because ultimately, when you do come in, how are we gonna win a championship? That's the question. And I just don't see him and the team on the same page. And right now, all the other teams that have Super Bowl aspirations, I feel like at least they're all starting off on this path in the same car. Having the same goals, and they just with Pittsburgh, we just the inconsistency it continues.
Yep. And do you agree that if they, were you playing, would you if you were playing, you were going through this, would you be in already in camp?
No, they got to give me my money first.
Thank you.
They got to get. I got to get paid.
One of my first
I got to get paid.
All right,
thank
see, I'm
you.
With you.
So you're going to miss
gotta
a game.
I got to get paid. Whatever it takes, I have to exercise my leverage as a
player.
Well,
okay, wait a second, because. You know they're not going to sign you to a long-term. So what are you going to do? It's Wednesday.
Okay,
you're not going to show up. What day are you going to show up?
Here's the thing. If they're not going
to. No, we're not going to sign you.
Okay, we're not going to sign me to a long-term.
No.
So I got to do what's in the best interest of Chris Kattan.
Right now,
the
yes.
The business.
Yes.
Okay, Ozzie Newsome used to say 53 independent contractors.
I ain't caring about Ozzie Newsome. Chris Kattan, what are you doing right now? You get ready to miss a game check.
I'm going to miss a game. Because right now, self-preservation.
Okay. No problem. He's going to miss a game.
It's self-preservation.
All right.
We're giving you $14.5 million.
You can miss 10 of them.
You can miss 10 of them and still
get an accrued season.
Yeah.
So I'm going to miss as many times as possible.
Because those are
times where I can potentially get injured.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to get to the next season when I can get paid.
I don't believe Chris Kattan. I'm not saying he's lying, but I believe Chris Kattan's playing football this weekend. That's what I do believe. All right?
It's a good conversation. Chris, stick around. Coming up.
He ain't lying. He's just not telling me the truth.
Big difference. Why do some Patriots regret trading Jimmy G? That's next on First Things First. First Things First is sponsored by DraftKings. Play the free DraftKings team pick'em to win your share of $1 million today. Back here on First Things First with Chris Kattan. Jimmy Garoppolo could not have scripted his first couple of weeks as the 49ers quarterback any better than this. Showed up in San Fran last year, won all 5 games he started, got a monster contract, improved his dating life. You know how it goes. Now, according to Adam Schefter.
Some people question if he improved it.
Some in the Patriots organization have seller's remorse. He reported some within the organization regret trading Jimmy G for a second-round pick. Chris, what was your reaction to this now hearing that the Pats may have had a little seller's remorse?
Tell me something I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that they do have a little bit of remorse in having to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo because you know you're getting toward the end of the Tom Brady era. And Jimmy Garoppolo in the 5 starts that he had for the San Francisco 49ers proved enough to that organization to earn a $127.5 million contract. To me, you don't have a succession plan in place for Tom Brady. So now that you know that you probably got him for another year or two, this is a situation where you like to have that natural handoff like we saw with Joe Montana and Steve Young or Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. And the New England Patriots, they were forced because of a contract issue to have to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo before they wanted to. They couldn't have the dynamic of Tom Brady's backup making more than him going into 2018.
Well, and they might have seller's remorse, but it was a product they had to sell. Now, you can argue they should have traded him to Cleveland and gotten more for it. That Belichick showed his soft heart for the first time ever and actually caring about the situation in Garoppolo landed. But, I mean, the franchise tag for a quarterback this year is $23 million. You're going to franchise him with Brady still on the roster? You're going to cut Tom Brady? Is that what we're talking about here? You're going to sign Garoppolo to a long-term deal. So Garoppolo got 5 for $137, but had he stayed in New England, he wouldn't have showed those last 5 games. Okay, so even if you get him to take the Ryan Tannehill deal from 4 years ago, that's 4 for $77. That's $19 million a year.
Like, more than Tom Brady still.
It's more than Tom Brady, and it puts your combined quarterback room salary at the highest in the league instead of one of the lowest in the league that doesn't have a rookie starting quarterback. Like, It was just an untenable situation. Tom Brady blowing through all the age stop signs, Tom Brady showing no sign of deterioration, has put them in this position. Now, they won a Super Bowl 2 years thanks to it. They came within a drive of winning another one last year, and they're the favorites this year. They would take that trade, but they had the contract ran out. Like, I don't know what other choice they had.
I was going to say, what other options did they have?
That's the thing. Like, sometimes you sell a car you really missed and you loved, but you had a kid and you can't have the coupe anymore. Like, you can miss the car, but you still had to sell it. Like, I don't know what other option that the Patriots had in this situation.
I'm glad you guys mentioned the other two transitions that we've seen from great to great. And it worked well. But people's feathers were ruffled in the process. Mm. People don't remember the Joe Montana, how good he was at the time, mm-hmm. and going to Steve Young, and how Joe was upset about it. Joe and his teammates were upset. There were people in the organization. Man, there was conflict in the 49ers organization. We can't move on from Joe, the greatest quarterback ever, who that next year took Kansas City.
To the AFC mm-hmm. Championship.
To the AFC Championship. So it lets you know that, man, Joe could still play. Brett Favre. I mean, there was no better example than Brett and Aaron. Back and forth, back and forth. Of course there was people in the Green Bay's organization that had regret. They were the ones talking to Brett to keep coming back. That's what created that confusion there. So, yes, those things. I'll pose a question. In 10 years, who do you think owns the New England Patriots?
Robert Kraft.
Or his son, yeah.
The family.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's going to be run by the Kraft boys. All right? Who's this report coming from?
Adam Schefter. Who's he buddies with?
Who's Adam Schefter friends with?
The Kraft sons.
Adam Schefter going to be reporting on this team in 10 years. In 10 years, one of them boys going to be going to be sitting where the dad is sitting right now. So mm-hmm. this is what this is. This is about relationships. This is about a future owner in the NFL who happens to be a son who has some control, but he don't have full control. Mm. And let me tell you one regret that they thought they were going to have. They thought they were going to have how to replace Bill Belichick. Oh, Josh McDaniel. No, we not going to let that happen. Bill, go in there and talk to him. Get him to renege on his commitment to Indianapolis. So we have the replacement to Bill in the mm-hmm. building, but we don't have a replacement to Tom Brady. In any business, if you look at Apple, if you look at what they've done, man, you better have a succession plan. And right now, the Kraft boys, they don't think they have one.
And here's the thing. They thought they did, and it looks like they did. I mean, they had it in Garoppolo.
No, ain't no thought.
Okay.
They knew.
Oh, okay, they knew they had sure.
They knew
they had it in Garoppolo. But the reason that the comparisons of Montana to Young, Favre to Rodgers, or even Manning to Luck, to me, are a little different is as Manning was Montana was still very good. But he wasn't as good as he had ever been. Favre was still very good. He took the Vikings to an AFC or an NFC championship game. But he wasn't at his best.
Yeah, they left the door open because they weren't their best.
Because they were slowly deteriorating.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When they drafted Garoppolo, Brady was slowly deteriorating. And then in 2015, he was amazing. In 2016, they win the Super Bowl. He has an all-time comeback. And he starts 2017 on an MVP pace and finishes it. On an MVP pace. So, Brady, you'd be moving on from Brady at apex Brady.
Now, Chris, I think that maybe the organization wouldn't have those regrets if you had traded Garoppolo to Cleveland because you would either have a player or draft picks that you would be like, okay, at least we have a plan for which we – Brian Hoyer is not a plan, all right? If he's riding in the car – You plan on calling AAA. If the car gets crashed, you don't plan on him driving the car.
Which I think is interesting because if you think about who's the most calculated, least personal, if you will, least worried about relationships and ruffling relationships all of any coach in the league, and it would be Bill Belichick. And now we're assuming, or maybe it's floating out there, that the one move where he actually had some, like, you know, maybe I have some personal feelings for this kid and I want him to land softly, is in the move, one of the most important moves the organization has made in the last couple years, which is basically trading away Tom Brady's replacement.
Well, here's the thing. It was an ownership decision, right? Robert Kraft had to sign off on it, and there was no way that he was going to allow Bill Belichick to move on from Tom Brady this offseason by cutting him. So it was a situation, we're going to keep Tom Brady here as the quarterback. Well, if you know that that's being made, then you got to move on from Jimmy G before the trade deadline. That's exactly what they did.
Right.
And I don't think they did bad for themselves when getting a second-round pick, because San Francisco is an awful team. You thought that that would be
a
little higher.
When they traded him, they hadn't won a game yet.
Yeah,
you thought it might be the first pick in the second round.
Exactly. So it's not as if they didn't get fair compensation for it, but everybody in the league knew that at some point they had to move on from one of these quarterbacks. I think everybody's just a little surprised that it was Jimmy Garoppolo and not Tom Brady.
And, go ahead, Steve.
Well, his play, Nick, you have pointed out his play has been on a level that they had to look at the backup compared to looking at the aging great.
Well, that's the thing is we can, and I understand why if I were one of the Kraft sons and I'm like, man, my dad's going to get all the credit for the Brady era. I'm going to look like a fail son if I don't have a quarter. If the Patriots fall off when Brady's gone, I get all that. But also, in fairness, to 5 years, $137 million, and five straight wins, let's all pump the brakes a bit on that. This is Steve Young. This is Aaron Rodgers. At least color me skeptical that we're going to see Jimmy Garoppolo in that light in a San Francisco 49er uniform.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.